Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast, and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for returning to my show. Thank you for the great increase in both website hits and traffic on the site and downloads of the show. Greatly appreciated. And all our new North American listeners, I hope you're enjoying the show. Please tell your friends about this for a whole variety of reasons. The main one being, this is a completely independent show. This show is here to bring this information to you, to let you make your own mind up about the subjects we talk about. But we're not here to sell you things. There is no hidden agenda about this show. It's produced in a very small way. I produce the shows, select the guests, do the interviews, actually make the show, and my webmaster, Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, designs the website, gets the show out to you, puts it on iTunes, and that's how it happens. Martin made a great theme tune for us, which we still use. That's our entire show. You're part of that family, and you have been part of the success that is now becoming this show. I am very grateful. I knew we could do it, but we have to do so much more. Thank you for the donations that have come in. Please keep those donations coming. They're absolutely vital to the work. I am not a corporation. I don't have bottomless bank balances and that kind of thing, I'm afraid. So the show continuing depends on you, which is a very fascinating model, don't you think? In America, I know you have National Public Radio, and periodically they have pledge drives. Well, if you think of this on the same sort of lines, the PayPal link and the donation section of this website is exactly the same. If you would like this show to continue, if you want to help to fund the growth and development of it, please make a donation, whatever you can afford. And if you can't afford to do that, that's okay. Enjoy the show. But if you can and you would like to, it will be very, very gratefully received. Please follow the link on the website, www.theunexplained.tv, and it shows you there how to make a donation. And if you have recently made a donation, thank you very, very much. Now, lots of reaction coming in still to editions 34 and 35, a couple of shows ago, about Phobos and the Martian moon that Richard C. Hoagland says is not a natural object. And the European Space Agency's Olivier Vitas, in edition 35, saying it is a natural object, and we'll be having a conference in Italy in September to say so. Your reaction, still welcome on this. Keep it coming. I might do a show about your reaction. I will certainly be putting Richard back on here to give his thoughts on it. And if I can get anybody else to shed any light on this subject, then they will be here on The Unexplained, because it's as easy as finding them, talking to them, and putting them out there to you. That is the great advantage we have over the big corporations and the mainstream media. We can work as easily and efficiently as that. Guest this time is an old friend of the show. She first appeared on the national radio version of this show about 5 years ago, and we became friends from there. She's also been on the online show. Always interesting to talk to. Her name is Jackie Newcomb, and her specialty is angels, but she talks about a whole lot more than that, and a lot of you have told me in the past you think she talks an awful lot of sense. So let's not waste any more time. Let's cross now to the English Midlands, to Staffordshire, and by digital hookup, Jackie Newcomb, the angel lady. Jackie, thank you for coming on. Hello.
You're welcome.
Now, you've been on here three times, and I think that's a record, you know. I don't even think Yuri Geller's done three times, so that's pretty damn good.
I love Yuri Geller.
No, he loves you too, Jackie, I'm sure. I'll tell him all about you. But, you know, I seem to remember predicting for you a very long time ago that things were going to explode for you. You would do really, really well with your angel work and other things, and it almost seems to be happening, doesn't it?
It does. I didn't realise you were psychic, Howard.
Well, I am a bit, you know. It's not a believe me, it ain't a gift. Don't think it is.
Oh, bless. Yeah, things have gone really well. I've got my 10th and 11th book out this year, so that's pretty good, isn't it?
It is pretty good. I mean, I've always wondered about you. You are one of these people who seems to be quite prolific, and I think we said this last time around, a couple of years ago when we talked, your ability to turn out books and come up with ideas for books doesn't seem to be limited by anything. You know, you just seem to be able to sit down and do them.
Well, do you know what? My work is dictated by the public response. So therefore, I get letters from all over the world. And whatever people are writing and asking me or telling me about, then that's the next book. So it's really public led. It's what people want and what people are interested in. And then I go off and I'll research it and I get all excited about it. And I think if it excites me, then it'll excite the reader, and that's the plan anyway. But it seems to work. People do seem to love what I do.
Well, they do, and you're being asked to do TV appearances and all sorts of stuff. So you're doing something right by the looks of it.
Yeah, I mean I have a pretty exciting life. I mean, it's not all glamour, you know, but I have a pretty exciting life. And I did some filming of a pilot show recently, and one minute I was lying in a coffin, and the next minute I was interviewing Frank Bruno. I mean, that was a good bit, but I'm not sure about the coffin.
All right, now just for our North American listeners, which now makes up a big part of the audience, I don't know if you know, Frank Bruno was a boxer in the UK, very big man and famous life. He goes like that, and a huge character. Yeah. Now he's almost like an entertainment character. Now this is what worries me though, Jackie, because you know, you research angels and other topics. The last time I think we talked about children and angels. If you start getting involved in light entertainment shows, aren't you going to dilute everything you stand for?
Do you know, I think I'll have to see how it goes. I mean, I work very much as the sort of mystic mum, really. I mean, that's who I am. I mean, part of my message is that I'm taking the scary paranormal subject and I'm making it seem normal and ordinary. And somebody told me that once and I thought, oh, thank you. You know, I thought, yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to do. So, I mean, really, the more mainstream I can go, the better I will like it, because I'd rather reach the big audiences. I'd rather, you know, tell people, the more people about what I'm doing.
Right. Well, I can understand why you would want to do that, because I've been trying to get some interest on a number of these topics with so-called mainstream media. And the problem is always that, especially older people, but even a lot of the younger ones too, if they're making decisions about these things, some of them simply think that subjects like this are wacko and they are not the kind of thing that the British public or the American public or any public really need to know about, because in some ways they're dark and they're dangerous. And if you go down that path, you're going to go nuts.
I get that. But I mean, what I found is that more and more mainstream television stars are interested in talking about the paranormal because they have a personal interest. I mean, one of the places that I always start is if you find out that somebody's had a tattoo with, say, an angel on it, angel wings or something like that, then there's usually a little interest there. And that's a good place to start. And I've interviewed a few sort of well-known names for, you know, sort of mainstream magazines even, about their spiritual and paranormal interests. And really, it's not that they're not interested. I think it's that they're nervous to talk because they don't want people to think, like you say, they're crazy.
Well, all of that is changing, but it's a process, and it's a process that is going to take time, I think. You know, when we talk about this 10 years from now, if God spares the pair of us and if the angels look after us, I think you'll see that things are different because they've changed over the last 10 years. So it is a process.
Dramatically. Yeah, absolutely dramatically. I mean, when I first started doing this, you know, I think I was seen as being the village nutter myself. You know, I think a lot of people thought I was a crazy woman. And then once I'd produced a book, then I was seen as an expert. You know, that was amazing. How should that make a difference?
Yeah, well, you see, we journalists, we like to... this is how it works, Jackie, and I'm glad you're learning this at this stage. We love to put labels on things. We like to say, well, David Icke, he's a bit of a conspiracy theorist, isn't he, in a way? So that's what he is. And, you know, the potty prophet, some of them call him. So that's him in his box there. And you're the expert on angels or, you know, the paranormal, depending on which way they want to cast you.
Well, really, no. I call myself a paranormal experiences expert because, I mean, if you started asking me about, angels in scriptures and things, I'd get a bit lost there somewhere. But if you start asking me about people's experiences, then I know, you know, I'm back on track. You know, it's really the paranormal experiences that excite me as opposed to the history of angels, which, you know, bores me, quite frankly.
Now, the point we started our last conversation from was I'd heard, maybe I'd even talked, I talked to so many people, but I heard a woman in America say, well, angels are all around us, and we each have seven angels who guard us and look after us in our daily lives. And I found that interesting, but I think, as I said to you last time, it's worth just getting your take on it in 2010, that... Yeah. Everybody's view of what angels are and what they're there to do, if they're there to do anything, seems to be different.
Well, it does. And, you know, it's difficult to say who's right and who's wrong, isn't it? But the fact that I do believe absolutely that we have beings who guide and guard me. I mean, for me, that goes without saying, because I've recorded thousands and thousands now of real life experiences. So that's the first thing. But what these angels are, that's, I think that's the thing that's up for dispute. So there's different types of being. You can have angels. Sometimes people will call their deceased loved ones angels. And in the traditional sense, they're not angels at all, really. But if you were to ask me, you know, is great-grandma watching over me, then I would say definitely yes. So that's one. And then you've got traditional angels, which is the sort of beings of light, God sent, if you like. That's something entirely different. But also I believe that we have sort of spiritual guides who also watch over us, deceased human souls whose role it is to check on our life path and make sure we're doing what we've come here to do.
All right, so three tiers. There are your relatives, yeah, which is nice to know that they might still be there. Other souls who've been here, but you don't know who they are. You know, as far as you're aware, you've never, you know, they weren't your relatives, as far as you're aware. And
that's
then
right,
there are the ethereal beings of light. Three tiers of this, do they work together?
Yeah, very, very much so, I think. And people will see different types of being depending on their circumstances. I mean, for the most part, people won't see anything. They expect to and they want to, but they don't. And I think it's more to do with our limited ability, our physical bodies, to be able to perceive them. I mean, our physical bodies have great limitations, and this is a cause of great frustration, that we can only see a very narrow band of the light spectrum. And these things sit outside of that for the most part. So infrared, ultraviolet ranges and beyond. And we can't see them because our eyes just can't pick them up. You know, and I think if you consider things like our hearing, for example, exactly the same. We have such things as silent dog whistles, you know, that whistle because they're at a pitch that our ears can't pick up, but they're silent to us, but they're not silent to the dog.
So just because you're not consciously aware of a thing doesn't mean it's not there.
Absolutely. And I think this is the danger, is that we base our entire belief systems on what we can see, hear, feel and touch, which is ridiculous because our human bodies are so limited in their ability to perceive things around them. That we only believe things that our eyes can pick up, our ears can hear, which is silly, really.
All right. Now the more quizzical and possibly potentially cynical members of my audience might say, uh-huh, but you know, they're seekers after truth as I am, and they have their right to their view. They would say, "How on earth do you know this?" They might even go as far as saying, "If they're in America, how the hell does she think she knows this?" And you know, I think they might have a point. How do you know this?
Well, because in times of altered consciousness, so when we're very tired, when we're ill, at certain times we slip in and out of conscious states where we can perceive the normally unseen. So we do slip in and out of that. When people are on the verge of unconsciousness, for example, they've been in a car accident. There are stories where they'll say, you know, a woman came to them, they were trapped inside the car. She was saying, "Don't worry, I'm going to be here with you," holds their hand, tells them they're going to be okay, sits in the ambulance with them all the way to the hospital and disappears. And nobody knows who that person is or was. Nobody else could see that person. And that person is then known as a guardian angel. And it's only during that time of, you know, where we're sitting on the edge of consciousness that they're able to perceive what is normally unseen. And there are, I mean, really, there are millions of personal case histories where people have had these types of experiences.
They're very, very common. We talked about them the last time we spoke, and I think the time before that. But have you made any progress since we had those conversations about those things? Have you learned more? Have you heard even more compelling stories than you had when we last spoke about 2 years ago?
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, it just goes on and on. I mean, what I have discovered is that the spirits of the deceased, our loved ones, are trying ever more interesting ways to reach out and communicate with us. And I'd already sort of documented many, many different ways. And dreams seems to be a number one favourite for some reason, that our body is physically asleep and they come into an ordinary dream, and then it changes into what I call a spirit visitation, so a real soul visit from the other side. And when that experience happens, we become very lucid and aware, and we say to that deceased person, why are you here? Or you're dead, aren't you? So immediately we're aware of the, not like an ordinary dream where, you know, pink giraffes could go flying by and that would be cool. Within this experience, we're very aware, very lucid. And what's starting to happen is that people are receiving messages from the loved ones which are going beyond the I love you, I'm still here for you. And sometimes they're being given information that they don't know yet. So, for example, maybe that person is involved in a court case of some sort, and the deceased will say to them, you know, everything's going to work out okay. You know, in 3 days' time, you'll get your answer, and, you know, it's going to go in your favour. So that type of thing is now starting to happen.
And has this happened to you?
I've had personal experiences, several in the past, where I've been given dramatic information. I had one where an uncle warned me that my dad wasn't to have an operation, and that was the first thing. And then the next morning, I sort of told my family, we were all on holiday in Spain together. My dad was taken ill very unexpectedly, and he was rushed to the hospital, a Spanish hospital, and they wanted to do an exploratory operation on him. And I said to my mum, do you remember the dream I had last night? And so we didn't put dad through the operation. We flew him home. And when he got back to England, they said, oh, good job. They didn't start messing around, because the trouble is, it was the language barrier that was the problem. And they said, oh, you know, he really wasn't well enough to do that. And it was just gallstones. He had gallstones. And they just sort of hooked them out with a very simple procedure, and he was fine.
Well, thank goodness they got him home for that. Right.
Yeah, so that was a big worry. I mean, my father, that was many years ago. My father has since passed, sadly. But since he passed, he came to me in a very powerful dream visitation. And he showed me a vision of my mother lying in a hospital bed. Now, my mum's never ill, never. It was my dad was ill for years, but my mum was never ill. But in the dream visitation, my mum was lying in a bed. And he said to me, it doesn't matter what the doctors say, your mum's going to be fine. And you girls, meaning myself and my sisters, you girls mustn't worry about her. She's going to be absolutely fine, he told me. So again, the next morning I got up, told my mum, told my sisters. We had a laugh about it because my mum was never ill. And then 3 days later, she had a heart attack.
Oh, wow.
And she was rushed into hospital. And I was sitting at the end of the bed exactly as I was in my dream vision. And I said to my mum, don't worry, remember what dad said, you're going to be fine. And after she'd been examined, at first the doctors thought it was much worse than it was. And then they decided that it was okay. She just needed to be taking a certain type of tablet, and she'd been taking nothing. So the very next morning, after a whole series of tests, they sent her home with a bag full of pills. And in fact, she is completely fine. And she was.
Now, the skeptics would say, and again, they'd have a point, that of course you're going to say to somebody who's going through something like that, you're going to be fine. And most of us would say that without getting the message through a dream or through an angel.
Yeah, yeah. But there is more to the story. While my mum was from a third party, while my mum was waiting in the waiting room at the hospital, she saw an old friend, somebody she hadn't seen for 10 years, she told me. And the guy came through the waiting room with his mother-in-law and his wife. And he said to my mum, I can't believe I've seen you here, Maggie. He said, I had a very strange dream the other night in which Ron, my dad, came to me. And he said, you know, I remember feeling very upset. It was the most bizarre dream I've ever had because it was very real. So he said, I knew he was dead in the dream. I was very sad to see him. He'd missed the funeral, this man, because he'd been working abroad and had felt very sad that he'd missed the funeral. So it was as if my dad was coming to say goodbye to him. And he said, at the time, he said, during my dream, he said, Ron was with a whole crowd of other people. He said, I didn't know who any of them were. He said, but I knew they were all dead. He said, and they were all watching over you, my mum. And he said, at the time of the dream, he said, you were sitting in a very strange way. He said, with your feet up in front of you. And he said, I remember that most clearly. He said, exactly as you're sitting right now on this trolley. because rather than sitting in a normal seat, she was sitting on a trolley, so she had her feet in front of her. Mm-hmm. And he said it was exactly as I could see in the dream. And he said it was as if they were all watching over you, healing you and everything. My mum said to him, look, you need to phone Jackie and tell her, because at the time my mum knew we were collecting these sort of stories that my dad was communicating. And he rang me up and explained. Poor man had no idea of the significance, only that he'd woken up the next day and it was such a vivid experience that he told his wife. He'd shared the experience with several friends and had cried because he'd felt in the dream it was a real visit from his deceased friend.
That is an amazing story. That is truly,
strange,
isn't it?
Strange coincidence again.
Amazing story. I wonder if we find it easier to get into these states where we can have these experiences at certain times. Now, I don't know whether you know this, whether I told you on email, but, end of last year, I broke my shoulder and I'm still in pain. I've been through a terrible period, couldn't work, couldn't do anything, and felt really, really as if I didn't know what was going to happen next. I was going to go bust and all the rest of it. And I was on painkillers, intense pain, every variety of painkillers. You know, I used to rattle when I walked. I'm on far fewer painkillers now, but the cocktail of painkillers and ibuprofen that I took, amazing. I've never taken so many pills in my life. But when I was on the strong painkillers, I would seem to go into a deeper level of sleep. And I would see in full color, three dimensions, people from my family who had passed on. Now, those in my darkest moments, those were often the people I would say, well, look, you know, how can you leave me in a situation like this? Please, can you help me out of this thing? And it's funny, in the most drugged state, having taken the most pain-killing pills, I would have more of those experiences.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, which is why, you know, in some cultures, they sort of always tried to replicate that by taking drugs specifically to see these unseen realms.
Ayahuasca, for example.
Yeah, but I mean, and it can work to a certain extent, but in fact, meditation will do the same thing.
And we have to say we are not advocating taking medication of any sort for reasons other than medical purposes.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I had an elderly friend of my parents who lost his wife, and he used to say to me, when I take this particular drug for my Parkinson's disease, he said the first few days, he said he would see his deceased wife, and he said we could talk to each other, you know, I'd see her very clearly. So I think, you know, certain things will act as triggers and open up these unseen realms. But to be honest, you know, as many people will have these experiences who aren't taking any drugs as do. So certain things like being tired, so being on the verge of sleep, many people will have spirit visitations at that time. And for example, my mum had an experience 6 months after my dad passed, where she woke up in her new apartment in her single bed, which my dad had never lived in, because she felt somebody sit on the bed. And she sat up and looked in front of her, and the person that had sat on the bed was my deceased father. And she actually felt him sit down on the bed. And she said, the first thing she said to him was, what are you doing here? Because she was aware of the fact he shouldn't be.
As you would.
Yeah. So, I mean, she was by this time awake because him sitting on the bed woke her up, leant over to switch the light on, looked back, and he just faded from view.
Now that's common. I've had that one, and so many people I know have had that one. I had that one when my mum died 4 years ago, and we were all distraught. It was not expected. It was not after a protracted illness, anything like that. So it was a huge shock that, you know, you don't recover from. But I did have a period of seeing her, and I remember, 2 weeks, 10 days maybe after she died, she came to me very vividly in a dream to make sure that I was okay. And once I started asking her questions, and I know I've told this story on this show maybe once before, as I started to say, what about you? What's it like where you are? How are you? Oh, it's so nice. She faded. But it wasn't a disappearance. It was a slow fade.
Yeah. And I mean, again, there's a reason for that. And it's and what I've discovered is the fact that some spirit, I mean, if they come and visit, they can only visit for a very short time. And I think I've probably explained this before. If you imagine that all of your relatives were at the bottom of a very deep swimming pool, and you could visit them anytime you wanted, but you have to swim to the bottom and hold your breath.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they come to visit, you know, sometimes spirits really struggle to get to the bottom of the pool. And so you'll get a glimpse of their face and they've gone, and that's all you see. You see their face and in a bright light and they've gone, and that's it. They might have a chance to smile, and that's all they can do. If they come regularly, or they are a sort of a more advanced spirit and they've maybe done it in other lives or something, then they can stay for a little bit longer. Now, my father and my father's brother, late father and late father's brother, my uncle, are very experienced at this and can stay for a long time. Now, one of my sisters has had experiences where my dad will come and visit and he'll visit for an hour. And she does sort of special tricks where she'll ask him questions about different members of the family so that she remembers when she wakes up, and she'll go through each person in turn. You know, how is this person? How's that person? Then she wakes up and she remembers most of it and she'll report back to the family. I mean, sometimes it's difficult. They might stay for a while and they tell you all sorts of fascinating things. You wake up and you forget it. But I think sometimes we're meant to forget it because they're telling us about what's coming up next. And when the time comes, when we get to that point, we then recall little details. I think they're
so
not allowed.
Do you think there's some kind of celestial ringmaster and there are some rules that spirits have to work to, or returning angels or relatives, whatever, have to work to?
Sure. I mean, sometimes they tell us things and I'll say, you're not supposed to have told us that, are you? And they'll say no. So, for example, you know, my daughters have sort of similar visitation dreams, and my nieces and nephews. So my father is quite strong in that way as a spirit. But I'm sure it's no accident that I'm doing the job that I am and he's as strong as he is. I'm sure it's all been set up in advance, because clearly any experiences that we have as a family, I'm going to write about and share. So I'm sure there's a reason for it, you know, that he is a particularly advanced at this skill, and that's why I've agreed to do this job. You know, I'd say it's not coincidence.
So, look, we can't have people getting the impression, and I know you wouldn't want that, that you are in some way gifted or a healer or a seer or anything like that. What you are is an interpreter.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't work as a psychic as such, because although I have a lot of experiences, I have a lot of paranormal experience, I have a lot of mediumship, it's mainly with my own family, and the messages are for my own family. And I feel that my role on Earth very much is to share my experiences and those of my readers, people who've shared their wonderful stories with me. That's what I feel my goal is. What I don't feel my goal is to give psychic readings. I mean,
and you know, we have to try, don't we? And I completely understand that. You know, we have to make sure that the message gets out there clearly, you know, what people are there to do. And, you know, some people are genuine psychics and have that ability, and some people, a lot of people, purport to be psychics. And I go away thinking, I'm not sure, which is why I tend not to go and see psychics. I have to say, I have a little rule for myself that unless I really feel that that person is the real deal, I don't go.
So, I don't normally, you know, though. Yeah, I feel that there are many psychics out there who definitely have a place and who have a role in consoling and helping people. I mean, absolutely, I believe that. And I feel that I'm doing the same thing, but in a different way. And reading, doing psychic readings is not sort of part of my spec, if you like.
But the thing that we both do is we try and codify and interpret this material and put it out to a wider audience, which I sense is the job that both of us in our different ways are doing. And
absolutely,
the one thing I want to try and get across is the fact that this world is not random. Nothing really happens randomly in this world. And if you think that it does, you have to be wrong. I'll tell you a little tiny story, and it might make you laugh. Let's see. But tell me what you think. I was on my mobile the other day, on my mobile phone, by the River Thames. And I'm sure she won't mind me telling this story. One of my good friends is a woman who used to be the producer, the executive producer of the Chris Tarrant radio show that I was on in London for 10 years. So she was in charge of it. And, you know, he did the show, and I was the news guy and also one of the team on that show. And it was a very successful show, 2.5 million listeners each and every day at its peak. So the thing was absolutely enormous in London. And this was just a few days ago. I'm on the mobile to Annie, and I said, you know, how are you? We had a little conversation. And Tarrant had a name for he used to take, as you can imagine, if you're in America, you won't know, but Chris Tarrant does, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, famous broadcaster, very funny guy, and, you know, a friend to me, I have to say. But That sounds like I'm name-dropping, doesn't it? I don't mean to, but I really don't. I really don't mean to. But I'm on the phone talking to Annie, saying da-da-da-da-da, and he had a name for Annie that listeners used to love. And, you know, it wasn't true. It was all in jest. But he used to call her, oh, Annie, the bag lady from hell. Any London listener to this show, and I know I've got listeners in places like St. John's Wood and places like that who might have heard the show on Capital, will remember this character, Annie, the bag lady from hell. You know, I was Howard. I was a total Doris because I was a bit of an idiot. And she was Annie, the bag lady from hell. Well, we're talking, and talking about those days and what we're going to do in the future. And a Thames riverboat comes along. This is near Hampton Court. And I said, Annie, I've got to stop you. You'll never guess what this boat is called. Bag lady. Now, what are the chances? I mean, maybe that's just coincidence, but I think it illustrates at its bare bones that there is nothing really random. Yeah.
Synchronicity, isn't it?
Synchronicity.
Coincidence.
That's the word. I couldn't have thought of it, but that's the word.
Synchronicity. Yeah, it is. And I think a lot of the communication that we receive from these unseen realms is synchronicity. It is coincidence, and it's coincidences that have been set up for us. Because if I ask for help myself personally, I don't suddenly see a 24 shining angel appear in front of me. What happens is a series of coincidences will fall into place beautifully to help with the situation that I have requested help for.
I think so you're right.
That's how I get it. That's how it works for me.
Well, I think you're right, and I've heard that from other people, but the frustrating thing about it, and certainly for me when I was lying there injured, and I just hate not being able to do things. You know, it's incapacitated me. I can't lift and stuff like that, and it's limited my driving for a while.
Life lesson.
Well, I'm probably finding out what it is, but you know, I kept asking for help. I kept thinking, okay, if all this stuff is true, and if we have helpers out there and angels and guardians, and if my dead relatives and my mum, who I was very close to, if they're all there helping me out, where are they now? And the months went by, and the pain continued, and the doctors were, for a while, I have to say, they weren't a whole lot of use. I had to find my own way to deal with this, and I've now found a great physiotherapist who is walking me through the process of recovery, but I had to do it all myself. But for a while, I was asking for help when I really needed it, and I wasn't getting it. And then, as you say, 2 or 3 months into it all, the little pieces started slowly to fall into place, and they're still falling now. So that's maybe how it works.
There is a reason for this, because I think sometimes these accidents, as we call them, are things that we have agreed to experience in advance of life.
So
that we can learn from them. And yet, I believe, as you said, you had to work it out for yourself. And the trouble is, I think if they, whoever they are, interfere too soon, we just become puppets in our own life. Because if somebody else is there pulling all the strings and solving every problem, why are we even here? We learn nothing. And annoying as it is, we learn the most, usually in our life, when some tragedy has occurred, some problem has occurred, and we have to find a path through that and come to some sort of peace at the end of it. And for you, the fact that you've managed to find a way, your own road through, to solve your own problem, that, I believe, is your life lesson. Well, and that's a simple form of explaining it. However, if people say to me, why did this person die? Or that, I don't know. I mean, heck, you know, it's far more complicated than I can explain.
Well, I've got friends who would say that both the accident and people dying and moving on and things happening, it's all part of your soul contract that, as you just hinted, was agreed on another level, in another place, at another time. And you don't even know that was agreed, but you've agreed to have that experience. And in other words, part of our soul contract now is not the time, perhaps, that, you know, I might die, but there will be a time when I will. And that will all have been sorted out in advance. And it's all part of the process, if you follow that line of thought.
And I do. But I think what's difficult is that as human souls, we don't remember that. And so when we lose somebody close to us, that's not a good enough explanation to say to somebody, this person died because they agreed to die in advance, because that doesn't work for anybody. I mean, that's a very cruel and heartless thing to say to somebody. However, I think if we were to be able to remember that we'd been with these souls many lifetimes before and will be again, then that that the way we treat death would be different. I mean, knowing what I know, when I lost my own father, it did make it easier. But I mean, I still grieved. I still grieved in the same way. I think what helped me was the fact that my father, from the day he died, that night, myself and my three sisters all had dream visitation experiences from him from that very first night.
And that has to be three of you in separate places and, you know, different ages, different locations. Yeah. If you all have the same experience at the same time. Now, you know, I have to stay impartial. You know, that's one of the sure. tools of the trade. But that's a pretty strong indication that there is something going on.
Yeah. And two of us had almost identical dream visitation experiences. Myself and my sister, Diane, both saw my father. It's like he showed us what happened next after he died. And we both saw him standing in front of crowds and crowds of deceased relatives where they were all sort of queuing up to see him. And his excitement at seeing all these people who, some I recognised, most I didn't, but deceased relatives who he hadn't seen for many years because they too had passed over. And he was hugging them and they were rushing over and kissing him. And it was like there was some sort of massive welcome party. And my sister Diane had almost identical. Her dream visitation was longer than mine. But, I mean, that was part also of her experience.
And had the three of you talked about that? Had you primed each other for that? Or did that come out of a clear blue sky?
We talked about it the next morning.
But had you talked about him crossing over and what it might be like? Because that could have planted the seed in each of your minds.
No, I mean, I think most of the, he sort of died around the lunchtime, and really we didn't go to bed until the early hours of the morning. And what we were talking about was the actual death itself and our shock at how it happened rather than what might happen next. I don't think we were ready for that yet. You know how you just sort of go over and over and over what happened and I can't believe this happened and we weren't there. And we were doing a normal sort of, as you would expect, a normal kind of shock and grieving thing. Another sister, in her dream visitation experience. I mean, my father actually had a heart attack, which was very unexpected because his heart had been monitored 5 minutes before and was fine.
Mm. That happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course. And then what happened was he had a heart attack. They brought him back and then he went again and they couldn't get him back. But what he said to my sister in the dream visitation experience was that he had one pain in his chest. Uh-huh. And she asked him a question, did you go through a tunnel of light, Dad? And he said, no. He said, I then just found myself on the other side. He didn't go through a tunnel of light. So that's kind of, we expected that. And yet research I've done since shows that only a small percentage of people who have near-death experience actually go through that tunnel of light. We all assume from watching TV shows and the film Ghost that that happens in every case. It doesn't.
Well, isn't that interesting? You are one of the few people who I've ever spoken to about this who hasn't said that is the most common experience.
Yeah, it's not. It isn't the most common. There's a whole host of experiences that people have. That is one of them. It isn't the most common.
Well, give me some examples then. There's your dad's experience where he just simply flipped from one place to another.
Yeah, he just found himself on the other side. Sometimes people immediately they'll have what we call the classic life review where your life flashes before your eyes. Sometimes people will find that they just step through a doorway or a gateway. I mean, that also the sort of the pearly gates thing, it seems to be a real phenomenon. It's
what about this stuff, Jackie, that I've heard? And boy, unless we're a Saint Mother Teresa or something, we all have things to account for, that we get a life review, a rerun of everything that we've done. And those occasions when we've caused people pain, and in my life once or twice, I know I have, and I regret that now being older and wiser. However, we all probably have those things, and we have to experience on our way to where we're going the pain that those people experience. Do you believe that?
Oh, absolutely. Because, again, I've read probably thousands of case histories, and people will say that they don't just, they have to witness themselves behaving badly, but they also feel what the other person felt and experience the repercussions of that. So maybe say somebody's done something in anger like kick a dog. You then feel that the pain that the dog had, and then maybe later on the dog bites somebody. And you then experience the pain of the person being bit. I mean, sometimes, it could be just a cross word that we're tired, we're frustrated, we're angry. Somebody comes over and says, can I have a quick chat with you? And we say, can you just please go away because I'm busy? And that person goes away and they're in a very fragile place and you really upset them, and then they go away and maybe they snap at somebody else. And, you know, and then there's the sort of repercussions of that cross word that we've had. And yet some of the good things that we do in life, people are always surprised at what counts in their review, where they're sort of near-death review, where maybe they've been somebody who's given thousands of pounds to charity over the years, and that's wonderful. But yet they realise from their past life review that the most important thing that maybe they did in life was, you know, a friend was in need and they hugged them. And they just didn't say a word, they just hugged them and they were there. And that thing helped that person more than anything in their whole life.
Well, that would be a nice thought. If that was so, that those small things can be very important. I'd like to think that's the case.
It's the love. It's the love that we give to other human beings which seems to count the most in that. When we have a past life review, that is what matters the most. That we stop what we're doing. You know, you put the pen down, you come off the phone, and you give that person attention, time, and love. It's not about money. You know, it's great that you raise thousands and thousands of pounds, you know, for the local soup kitchen. But you know what? It's better that you stick on an apron and you go down there and you get stuck in.
Now, are you saying that from your research, or are you saying that from your gut?
No, from my research. Well, you know, and I guess later from my gut as well. But from my research, absolutely. The near-death experiences. Life is about love. And what we do for other people while we're here, that's what matters. Do you know, the money is irrelevant. It's, you know, from a life point of view, we are here to learn about love. I mean, that sounds makes me sound like a sort of a religious figure.
And I think a lot of people will resonate with every word that you say. Some people won't, because, you know, some people just never do. But I resonate to it because, you know, money, I never made loads of money. And the experiences that I've had along the way, I've learned from every single one. Even that rotten accident back in December. Once again, I was reminded of the things that are impermanent in our lives and the things that really count in our lives. And I guess maybe experiences like that rotten thing that happened, that's what they're for. Now, your publisher is going to get really mad if we don't talk specifically about your new book, which is out in July 2010 in the UK and presumably around the world. So we've got to be fair to that. So tell me what it's all about. Because the great thing is I can get an email from your publisher saying, would you like to talk to Jackie? And I'll just say yes. And I don't actually bother with you doing lots of research about you because we just talk. And I think that's better in a way. So
We
do gossip. So over the fence. But tell me about, as they say in the US, tell me about your new book.
I will tell you about my new book. My new book is called Angel Secrets. Ooh. And it's my first illustrated book, and I'm really excited about it. It's beautifully illustrated, and all the photographs were taken specifically for the book, so it's full of pictures of roses and crystals and just lovely. It's a real girly book, so very lovely. And what I've done, I mean, I've called it Angel Secrets because what I've tried to do is I've included all of the communication information that people have shared with me over the years, because a lot of people want to reach out to their guardian angel and they want to know what to do. So rather than me sort of give them an instruction manual, because I don't know everything, what I've done is I've shared all the secrets that people have told me, the times when they've had contact with their guardian angels, or how they've done that, or they've maybe done little meditations, or they've sort of, I don't know, sat on a rock overlooking the sea. And what I've done is I've just shared everything so that people can sort of read through and they can say, oh, that sounds fabulous, or yeah, I don't want to have a go at doing that. And you kind of pick out for yourself. That's basically the book in a nutshell.
Oh, well, that's really good. We've got through that part. Give me one good story from the book then. One good tale, one good secret from the book.
Oh, I won't tell you. There are stories in the book, but I won't tell you the stories because I don't want to spoil the surprise. But the secrets...
Well, a little taster. A little soup song, whatever they call it.
I'll tell you one of the secrets. One of the most important secrets, I think, if you want to communicate with angels, is to give them permission to intervene with your life. And they'll help out in emergencies. But I think for the most part, because we have free will as human beings, and as I said earlier, we're not puppets. If we invite them to assist us, then they can get involved. So you literally just need to say, can you help me, please? And of course, in danger, when we're in danger, in emergency situations, that's what we do. We'll say, help. You know, there's no sort of specific rule that says who we're calling out to. We're just asking for help, and then they can get involved. So we can do that ordinarily by doing something like wearing a little angel pin. So people wear a little pin that says protected by angels. And all you're doing is you're just saying, I give you permission to become involved in my life.
So literally, they can be up there or wherever they are in whatever dimension they're in, champing at the bit to come and help you. And unless you say, I allow you in accordance with, what is it, the greater will of my higher self or whatever the phrase is.
Sure.
You can then open the door for them.
Help. Yeah, I mean, just saying help's enough. Because all the while, as we were talking about lessons earlier, all the while we're struggling away, we're learning something. So we might just be extremely frustrated. I mean, I'm convinced that some of the lessons that we take on for ourselves are very challenging. And to be honest, we need the help. But unless we ask for help, I mean, you imagine, let's give you an example. You imagine you've just moved into a new house, you're out in the garden, you're trying to sort of, you know, design your new garden. And you have a plan in mind, you want something very modern, and you'll find it very, very challenging because nothing seems to be going the way that it should. And your next door neighbour who has a beautiful garden sticks his head over the fence and says, you know, mate, you know, if you just did it like this, it would be better. You'd probably be thinking, please mind your own business.
Yes.
You know, I'd rather struggle and do it my own way. However, if you said to your brilliant neighbour garden, you know, can you spare me 10 minutes? I just need a bit of advice. He'd say, absolutely. And then you decide whether you take the advice or not. So there is a difference between asking for help and somebody sort of sticking their nose in and you know, getting involved when that help has not been asked for. I think you put it in sort of real terms like that, there's a better understanding.
Sometimes I have these little psychic flashes and I tell people things that do happen. And there are many examples from my life where I've done that. I had this weird, as you were talking to me then, I had this weird feeling that your illustrated book, somebody either wants to or is going to want to turn this into some kind of DVD in a sort of gatefold presentation with video content and content from yourself. So if it hasn't happened, watch for it.
Interesting. Well, we are working on a second project with it already. It doesn't include a DVD at the moment, but that's very interesting. Watch this space.
Well, maybe I've just sown the seed. If you need anyone to narrate it, by the way, I'm very reasonable.
Absolutely. Well, with your lovely voice, of course.
Frighteningly reasonable.
They say, no, do you know what, Jackie? Your voice has completely changed.
Hey, I tell you what, I mean, you say, hey, Jackie, your voice has changed, and you say that's a joke. But over the years that I've known you, which is probably 4 or 5 now, I think, because I first put you on TalkSport Radio in the UK, you've changed. Your ability to carry through a message and, you know, string together a series of connected propositions, that's all developed. You know, I think it has.
Way, I hope.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Do you feel that you've developed and with your ability to communicate, use the media, do all the stuff that you're doing?
Yeah, I do, Howard. And I think it's just because I'm more relaxed about it now. And at first, I think it can be quite frightening when you're talking to the press, you're on the radio and so on. It's frightening because you feel you need to be somebody or you have to act in a certain way. And I realised that, you know, it's not good trying to pretend you're somebody that you're not, even if you're not trying to trick people. And I would never do that. But I decided a long time ago the best thing is just to be myself. So, I mean, I hope people like who I am, and if they don't, that's also okay.
Well, that happens with successful people. I've been lucky enough to work with one or two people who are very, very successful, and I've studied them in a way. I've watched them work, and the best ones are the ones who are themselves all the time. You know, over the years, me doing this, doing news and all the things that I've done, I have had to accept me as myself with my foibles and failings and imperfections. And, you know, I'm now at an age and a stage, by the sounds of it, you are too, certainly at the stage. I'm not even going to talk about age. We don't talk about age on this show. I never talk about age, but you get to a stage where you simply, life is too short and you don't care. You just have to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
And if they like it, they like it. And if they don't, well, let's move on to something else where it might be a little more appreciated, because that's all there is. Okay, how would you sum up yourself the journey that you've been on, what you are, what would you call yourself? I know you tried to tell me at the beginning that you were a sort of investigator or revealer.
Yeah.
Everybody has to have a label.
They do. All right. Well, I'll kind of give you a label then. I mean, what I'm not is I'm not a scientist. So I don't go out and try and prove the things that I say in any way. I take things at face value. What I do is I collect together interesting experiences of the paranormal. My theme is always, if possible, to bring joy and peace to people. So I'm looking for positive experiences. Occasionally I will add something in that's maybe negative. I don't get many negative stories sent to me, to be honest. So I'll put in the same percentage. So maybe one story in each book that's maybe slightly negative. If there's a lesson to be learned there. I mean, other people, that may be their choice. They want to go there. I don't. What I'm looking to do, I think, is to show people that there is something else out there, that life is not as we see it, that I do believe in life after death. And I want to comfort people that when their loved ones go, that they haven't gone forever, that they're just there. And that literally, because our bodies are so limited in their ability to pick things up around us, that for the most part, we can't perceive them. But it's not because they're not there. It's because our bodies are unable to pick them up. So that's kind of what I do. And I guess I do it. People have said, oh, you're very down to earth. You're very normal, Jackie. And I say, thank you, because I want to be normal. I'm not a guru. I'm not, you know, I don't want to be put on a pedestal. I'm just a normal mum, a normal housewife who maybe that's why I'm doing the job, Howard. Maybe the fact that I'm just a normal person and I'm not seen as some sort of guru figure, maybe that's why it works. People can relate to that.
That's my theory about it. I think that is why it's working for you, because you're one of us, I guess, is the feeling. But there will be people who might get in touch with me who will say, who is this woman? She's got no background in science. What does she know? All she does is collect stories. She's just another journalist. What do you think?
Yeah, I've never thought of myself as a journalist, because I think as a journalist, you have to be able to see both sides of the story. And the trouble is, I don't, because I believe in life after death. I believe there's more to our world than we can see. So therefore, I'd be a pretty rubbish journalist, because I don't think I could see both sides of the story.
Join the club. All right, then. So 2010, another book out. I know how prolific you are with all this stuff. So what else for the rest of the year and into 2011? You probably know already.
Yeah, well, I've got a second book out later in the year, another book of stories. I'm working on some angel cards. I'm involved in, I'm co-presenting a charity talk in the UK later on in the year. I'm doing some workshops and things with some well-known names. I've got some exciting projects coming up.
Well-known names, who would that be then? Can you tell me or not? Or are they so well-known you can't tell me?
No, I'm going to be doing a workshop with Most Haunted's David Wells.
Oh, TV program, right? Okay.
David Wells. Yeah, that's sort of. We're doing a workshop together. I mean, probably the easiest thing. Things are changing all the time, so I mean, if people are interested in what I'm doing, they can always go and visit my website, angellady.co.uk, and have a nose around and see what I'm up to. But all sorts of exciting projects in the pipeline. God, I don't know if you picked that up. I've got my kitten behind me just suddenly did a lovely purr then.
Can I tell you, sir, has your kitten got a bell? Because I think I heard it.
Yes.
Oh.
Monkey, I try and get her out. If I'm on the radio, one of the cats are in here. They sit each side of the desk when I'm working and lay all over the keyboard. Very annoying, but I'm sure there's some sort of cosmic reason they're helping me work in some way.
I'm a great believer in cats, and I think cats perceive all sorts of things. I love cats. When I was having one of my physiotherapy sessions in Twickenham a few weeks ago, the lady who does this physiotherapy lives in this most beautiful house. It's like a mansion. I love this place. It's sun-baked all the time. It's almost like a villa. But in the garden, this cat insisted on making itself known to me, and it was, I've never seen a cat like it. It was chocolate colored. I've never seen a chocolate brown cat before, and he was so friendly. It was as if we had known each other forever, and I just thought, this cat perceives something. This is not just an animal with no thoughts and feelings about anything. This cat's got a real personality. Fascinating thing. Really was.
Well,
sorry.
They do. You know, they believe that cats don't see the person first. They see our aura or our energy. They read our energy field, and dogs are the same, which is why a dog will see somebody from a distance and start growling at one person and wagging a tail at another, because what they're doing is they're picking up our energy field. So they're able to read things. So I'm sure this cat was thinking, hey, this guy's okay. I'll go and give him some love.
I don't know. I only saw it once, but, you know, I haven't seen it again since. But it was so friendly, and it just seemed to... weird experience. Never quite had that experience with a cat. It seemed to know me.
Yes.
And that is... bizarre, but there we are. Hey, Jackie, always good to talk with you. You know, we can always fill an hour, can't we? We can always talk.
Oh,
but I think it's important, you know, we talk about a lot of heavy subjects. Our last show was about the Shroud of Turin and some really heavy science. And we've also had an enormous debate going on this show a couple of editions ago about the Martian moon Phobos and Richard C. Hoagland in the US, space expert who believes that Phobos is not a natural object. I managed to speak with the European Space Agency, who told me most definitively that everybody there believes that Phobos, this moon, is a natural object, but this debate is continuing. So it's nice to lighten things up just a little and take it back to the human level, Jackie, and that's exactly what we've done. So thank you very much.
Too scientific.
No, too much science all the time. You know, we need to have a break from it every so often. Jackie Newcombe, the Angel Lady, what's the website one more time?
angellady.co.uk.
Nice and easy. Jackie, thanks for talking with us. Take care, go well, and we'll catch up with you in another year or so, I think.
Well, don't leave too long, because I miss our little gossip.
Or sooner, who knows, if the fates decide. Jackie Newcombe, the Angel Lady, always a pleasure to talk with her here at The Unexplained, and marvellous to see how her career as an author and investigator is burgeoning and growing. I first spoke with her 5 years or so ago on this show, and it's nice to know that she is still around and doing really, really well these days. Let me know your feedback about her or anything else you've heard on this show or seen on the website. Please go to www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv, and you can email me direct through the site. Or if you want to come to me directly, you can do it this way, but I prefer you to go through the site, unexplainedhh@yahoo.co.uk. Thank you for listening to the show. Many thanks for your donations. Please keep those coming. They're vital for this independent work to continue. Thank you to Adam Cornwell for his hard work at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool for getting the show out to you. Martin, your theme tune is fantastic. Thank you for it again. And above all, thank you to you for listening to The Unexplained. Please tell your friends about this show. If you have a website and would like to link to it, get in touch. We can make that happen. Go well, take care, and I will see you again soon here on The Unexplained. My name is Howard Hughes.